Welcome to Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling. My name is Pat Poling. I'm the founder and CEO of Mara Poling, and I'm happy to be with you this week as we continue our look at tax and the tax advantages that we all experience when we invest in multifamily real estate. This week, we're going to be taking a look at depreciation. It's one of the major tax advantages when you invest in real estate. But what exactly is depreciation, and how does it work? How is it of benefit to me and you as investors? And what's the catch, right? There's always a catch. So what is that other shoe that drops on depreciation? We're going to take a look at all of that. Cost segregation, acceleration, a number of different items. That's what we're going to be talking about this week. Thank you for joining me. If you have questions, shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com, MaraPoling.com. Don't forget to swing by the Learning Center at marapoling.com. We are hosting today, the day this podcast drops, we are hosting our 2024 Outlook. We'll have the recording of that up and operational sometime probably this next week. So swing by the Learning Center and you'll be able to check that out if you are not one of the folks that was registered and was able to participate live with us today. Okay, let's dive into this. Oh, by the way, would love any feedback or questions you might have. In particular, we've made some updates to our audio system. I think you might recall we mentioned a week or two ago that we had relocated our office and now are in our more permanent space. We still have a few more upgrades to do to it, but hopefully you're enjoying improved audio quality this week. Hopefully we'll even take it up a notch in the next couple of weeks. All right, so with that, let's move into depreciation. So let's start with the basic notion of what depreciation is. And we'll keep this brief. My sense is 90% of everyone on here gets it. Those of you that are new to investing, what is depreciation? Well, let's say that we ran a landscaping business, right? And so we would have some trucks, right, that are crews would use when they'd go out in order to maintain your yard, right, or install new landscaping. And so we'd buy a pickup truck and we'd buy it for $50,000. And we would use that truck for 5 years. And in 5 years, we'd sell that truck. And maybe we'd only be able to get $20,000 when we sold it. So that $30,000, that's the actual cost to us of that truck over that period of time. And I'm not including financing costs and those things. So it's going to cost us $30,000. And if we spread that out over 5 years, that's $6,000 a year. So every year, it's costing us $6,000 to have this truck, because that truck is actually decreasing in value. And for those of you that own automobiles, you know that they don't depreciate in a straight line, right? Within the first day, right? Allegedly, a huge amount happens. But basically, it's over that first year, you get a big drop in depreciation in the value, and then a slightly smaller drop, and so on until you get out towards that year five where it starts to level out. But you can write that depreciation off on your taxes, right? So we'd have an expense in our business of $6,000 a year for this truck. That's what it would cost us. And that makes a lot of sense. Everybody agrees that that truck is going to be worth less money 5 years from now. Well, we can do the same thing with real estate. And so when we buy a piece of real estate, let's say that we buy a building and we pay $10 million for this building. And we determine that 80% of what we have purchased is depreciable. Now, I'm going to come back to that in a moment, but let's just use that number for now. That means we have $8 million that we can depreciate over time. So our building that we bought for $10 million, $2 million of it is always going to be worth $2 million, but $8 million is going to become 7 million and then 6 million and then 5 million and 4 million, just like the pickup truck went from being 50,000 to 40,000 to 30,000 all the way down to $20,000. And we get to do exactly what we did with the pickup truck. We get to depreciate the building over a certain period of time. They're different time frame than what a pickup truck would be depreciated over. But we get to depreciate it over that period of time and write that depreciation off, because that's an expense that we incur. And that would seem to be very logical if, when we go to sell the building 5 years from now or 10 years from now, we only could sell it for $8 million or $7 million or $6 million because it did decrease in value. Well, remember what we have talked about before, that while, yes, we buy real estate, we're buying a business. Our $10 million building is actually a business that generates $500,000 a year in income, in net operating income. And when I go to buy that net operating income from the prior owner, I negotiate with them and I tell them, I'm willing to pay you $20 for every dollar of operating income you have. And so I pay $10 million to buy this business that generates $500,000 a year in net operating income. If I grow that to $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, and I go to sell it, well, now when I sell it, someone's buying $800,000 of net operating income. And for the same $20 per dollar, they're going to pay me $16 million. Well, our $10 million building went up in value over that time. It appreciated, not depreciated. Now, are there buildings out there and investments in real estate that actually depreciate? Yes, there are. That is not the norm. The normal real estate investment is going to be an investment where the building appreciates. It goes up in value. Imagine if that pickup truck we bought actually went from being worth $50,000 to being worth $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. Well, we get to depreciate it. Why is that the case? Why do we get to depreciate this? Well, one, it's just the way the tax code is written, right? And when we pay taxes, we simply follow the tax code. Whatever the rules are, that's the way we play. All right, well, that just begs the next question. Why is the tax code that way? Well, as I said, there are buildings that depreciate. Buildings appreciate at lots of different rates. Appreciation is not guaranteed. So there's a lot of variables in all of that. But ultimately, we as a society, right, we all together through the representatives we have elected have decided that there's value to society, to our community, by having private investors put money into real estate so that we can have the infrastructure we need, whether it's housing or office space or storage space or distribution facilities or whatever it might happen to be. So we can have that infrastructure and it can be of benefit to society as a whole. And one of the ways that we support that is we agree to provide some tax incentives. And one of the tax incentives is, hey, we get to depreciate these assets. So what an amazing thing. We can buy a building for $10 million, have an $8 million depreciable base that gives us millions of dollars of depreciation that protects income for us, at the same time that that $10 million building is becoming an $11, $12, $13, $14, $15, $16 million property. Now, a quick aside, buildings don't just appreciate. They do depreciate. Everybody knows that there are things inside a property that do deteriorate over time and that need to be managed, right? A roof. Roofs don't last forever. And so there is money that's invested in the property. It's not $10 million though, right? So it's not dollar for dollar with the depreciation. Okay, so we get this wonderful depreciation benefit, and that allows us to have a loss, right? So we have that $500,000 a year of operating income. We have some other expenses, right? We probably have interest on a loan, and that interest on a loan might be a couple hundred thousand dollars, maybe even 300,000, right? Depends upon the size of the loan. Well, if I've got $200,000 in operating income, but I can have $1 million that year of depreciation, well, now I've had an $800,000 tax loss, when in fact I've generated $200,000 in operating cash that I could use in a variety of different ways. That is the beauty of depreciation. So a little more about the math. Let's go back to that 80% comment I made. So we buy a $10 million building. Where does this 80% come from, and why does it exist? Well, it exists because land doesn't depreciate. You don't have to put money into land to keep it land. You have to put money into, over longer periods of time, into the roof, into walls, into appliances, into those sorts of things. You have to make investments to keep those assets usable and functioning. And the way we determine that is we look at the community and we do some analysis and we make a determination of, is it 70% of the investment? Is it 80%? Is it 90? The density of the investment would have a lot. I mean, think about it. If we were to purchase a building, an apartment building, but it was on 100 acres of land, we wouldn't be at 80%, right? The land might be half of that investment value. And so we'd use 50%. So in the example I'm using, we selected 80%. That means $2 million never gets depreciated. So the $8 million does depreciate. How do we depreciate it? Well, there's several different ways. So one of the ways you can depreciate it is to not depreciate it. I can't tell you how many times I run into this when I talk to individual investors that have owned properties themselves, especially those that do their own taxes, that looked at this up front and simply said, this looks too complicated. I'm just not even going to deal with it. They've given up a real opportunity to take advantage of one of the unique capabilities we have in real estate. So that's one way, is you can just not depreciate it. The second is you can do straight line depreciation. So straight line depreciation takes that $8 million and spreads it out over a certain period of time, 27 and a half years. We can have another conversation about where these timeframes come from, but 27 and a half years. And so you take that $8 million and you spread it out over 27 and a half years. We'll grab our calculator real quick here. And that means that every year we get about $290,000 in depreciation. So after 1 year, our $8 million has been written down to the point where it's worth $7,710,000 on the tax books. And then the next year we write another $290,000 off, and so on and so on. And that makes a lot of sense. It's very simple. But if you really start to think about it, the things that we purchased are not homogeneous, right? We didn't buy an $8 million building. We bought washers and dryers. We bought flooring. We bought parking spaces. We bought a foundation. We bought roofs. We bought all these different little pieces. And while a foundation, 27 and a half years sounds like that makes a lot of sense. It's a very long-term asset. What about a washer, dryer, or a refrigerator? Is that a 27 and a half year asset? Are we really going to have one that long? I think we've all had a refrigerator in our lifetime that just lives forever, right? Maybe it's out in your garage now. But generally speaking, appliances don't last that long, right? So what if we were to break our $8 million down and instead say, well, this much of that $8 million goes to appliances, and this much goes to the roof, and this much goes to our landscaping, and this much goes to, and we just continue with the list. So that would be really valuable because then we could depreciate each of those items over the appropriate time frame that is their life cycle. So I'm looking at right now in front of me something called a cost segregation study. Now, this is a study that we do on each of our assets. We have it performed by an independent third-party firm, right? So this is not something we do ourselves. If the IRS comes along and says, "Hey, why are you taking this much depreciation? Prove it." We've got this great study signed and stamped by an outside firm in which they attest to the methodology and the results that they generated from this. And then we use that to create our depreciation schedule. So this breaks it down into short-term items, short-life items that are 5 years, that are 7 years, that are 15 years, and then that fall into that longer term 27 and a half years. So some of the items, I'll just take a peek here at this list. So some of the items that are in the 5 year time frame. So these are items that, if you think about it, okay, we spend $1,000 on a short-term item for 5 years, and we're going to fully depreciate it. We're going to write it off completely. If we spend $1,000, well, that means by the end of 5 years, it'll be worth zero. So we get $200 a year of depreciation on that, as opposed to if you took that $1,000 and spread it over 27 and a half years, we would only get $36 a year. So we get a lot more depreciation from that. So refrigerators, dishwashers, microwave ovens, countertops, cabinets, window blinds, right? So mini blinds, wall coverings, decorative. The common area furniture out by our pool and so on, all of those items. So let's just stop here. We're going to look at the other time frames in a moment, but let's just stop here for a moment and think about this. All right, so a mini blind. Do mini blinds last 5 years? If they're well maintained, if they're good quality, right? If you buy the 2-inch wood or faux wood mini blinds, you probably get 5 years out of those. I've seen properties where they're, 10 years old or older, and they still function and look great. And you can buy some of those less expensive mini blinds, the thinner, narrower aluminum type that often get bent and distorted, and they might not even last 5 years. So 5 years sounds like a pretty good time frame for that. Could be shorter, could be longer, but that sounds about right. Cabinets. Do cabinets last 5 years? Well, as far as the IRS is concerned, they do. We have buildings that we purchase all the time that are 20, 30, 40 years old, even, that have original cabinets in them. And they need a little bit of maintenance on them, maybe a coat of paint, maybe some new hardware. The cabinets are still just fine. And that's a much longer lifespan, obviously, than what you would see as far as the IRS is concerned. But the IRS lets me write off that amount of the building I've purchased that's allocated to those cabinets. It allows me to write that off over 5 years to depreciate that. So I'm getting a depreciation there that's likely different than the actual lifespan of the asset itself. Let's take a look at the next group, which is the 7 year items. And this is always the smallest group, and there's almost nothing in it. It always seems to be that it's around office equipment that we have. So we kind of ignore that. What about 15 year? So 15 year, we're talking about items. These are more robust infrastructure kinds of items that are going to be lasting a long time. So these are things like sidewalks and curbs and fencing and signage and swimming pools. all of those kinds of things. And again, if you think about them, they certainly last a long time. Is a sidewalk going to last more than 15 years? Well, in some markets, because of the weather conditions, and if the original developer was smart about where they planted certain landscaping, a sidewalk's easily going to last more than 15 years. And in other environments where the weather is harsh, and maybe somebody planted a tree in a spot that's a beautiful spot to have a tree in, but it's near some walkways, you might be dealing with that sidewalk every 5 years. So again, it could vary from that standpoint. Fencing, the same. That's, probably a little more realistic. Swimming pools, you probably get more than 15 years out of a swimming pool. And then 27 and a half years. So that's like the building structure itself, right? So the 2x4s in the walls, or 2x6s, whatever it might be, the electrical wiring, right? The plumbing that's in the walls, all of those items, right? And so when you put all that together, you get a depreciation schedule that is very different than 27 and a half years. Let's go back to the results of this particular study that I was using for us to walk through here. So in this particular example, we ended up with about 25% of the depreciation on this particular property that I'm looking at. About 25% of the depreciation that's available was available in the first 5 years, a very small amount in the 7 years, and then another 25% or so in that 15-year time frame. So pretty significant. But let's think about that for a moment. So in the first 5 years, that means I get to write off 25%, and we'll use our example, our $8 million building. I get to write off $2 million. Well, in the first 5 years, I also get to write off 5/7 of the 7-year items, right? Because those 7-year items are depreciating over 7 years. And over the first 5/7 of that happens. So I get that chunk. And on the 15-year items, I get a third of that. So that's another $2 million that I get about a third of. So close to $700,000. So I get, in the example I just put together using those example percentages, I get a $2.7 million depreciation over the first 5 years, which is $540,000 a year. So if you recall, that's almost twice the amount of depreciation we would have received if it was straight lines. Oh, but let's add to that acceleration. So cost segregation is not acceleration. Cost segregation is simply having a more accurate depreciation schedule. Acceleration means periodically the tax code will be changed, in which there'll be an incentive for capital investment, right? So this is us as a society saying we want to juice the economy a little bit. So we're going to put some specific depreciation rules in place for a short period of time, so that we can incent people to go spend money on capital assets. Remember our landscaping business we talked about? Maybe there's a new law that's passed that says I can get some special depreciation treatment that might cause me to sell one of my older trucks and go buy a new one now, as opposed to waiting a couple of years to do it, because I could get some depreciation that I wouldn't be able to get otherwise. And I go buy another truck because of that, which is a boost to the automobile industry and then trickles through all of the rest of the economy. So in 2017, there was a law passed that had an acceleration provision in it that in the first year of a capital investment, you could accelerate 5 years of depreciation. Now, this has a sunset provision built into it that phases out over time. We're in that sunset time frame where it goes from you can do 100% of it over of the 5 years to you can do 80% and then 60 and 40 and 20, and then it goes away. But if there is acceleration, so let's just use this and say there's an acceleration provision today for 100% of the 5 year depreciation. Well, then that means that I can take the entire $2.7 million that I said I'm going to see over the course of 5 years, and I can take all of that loss now and put that on my books. So now my $200,000 in net profit after my interest expense becomes a $2.5 million loss this year. That's really significant. Depreciation helps us lose money for tax purposes. What that does is that shelters the income, right? So if I'm having income that's generated, I'm not having to pay tax because I'm not actually, from a tax standpoint, experiencing income. And that puts me in a position where my after-tax income is higher because I'm not paying tax than if depreciation didn't exist. Well, my goodness, why wouldn't I want to do this? This sounds fantastic. It sounds too good to be true. All right. So what's the catch, right? We mentioned that in our intro. What's the catch? Well, the catch is you got to pay it back. So at some point in time, we're going to sell the building. And when we sell the building, again, we'll use our example, $10 million property. We've depreciated 2.7 million off of it. So its basis, what it's worth, right? We're just going to make this simple, is 7,300,000. And when we go to sell it, we don't sell it for 10 million. We sell it for 16 million. Remember, we said it grew in value. So now I didn't just make $6 million, but I'm also getting $2.7 million from the sale that's above what my basis in the building is. So basically, the depreciation that I wrote off is getting recaptured. That's the term that you'll hear. And there are tax rates associated with recapture that may be advantageous to the ordinary rate you'd be exposed to. If you do apply cost segregation, there could be a slightly different rate for certain items. This is one of the reasons why, again, if you are an investor and own your own properties, you really want to have a good tax advisor that can help you work through how all of this works for your specific situation and what makes the most sense for you. If you work with a sponsor like Mara Poling, then we've done all that for you, and this is what shows up on your K-1 that we talked about in one of our recent episodes. So why would I do all this then if I'm only getting this benefit for a short period of time? Well, one of the reasons to do that is because it's allowing us to defer that tax exposure. So instead of having to pay tax along the way on income that I'm receiving, I'm able to defer it and not only pay it later, but pay it at these more advantageous recapture rates. So that's beneficial. And I can do a 1031, right? We can do a like-kind exchange, and we can take that tax exposure and push it further down the road so that I don't have to deal with it today and I continue to get benefits from it. And by the way, because I'm going to be purchasing a larger property, I sell my $16 million building, I've got to buy one for $16,001,000. I'm going to likely have some additional depreciation I can get out of that new building, even though I've depreciated this one in a meaningful manner. So depreciation is a wonderful benefit that we get when we invest in real estate that you don't get if you invest in a stock or if you buy a bond or something along those lines. It is tax deferral. It's not tax avoidance. We're going to, at one point in time here in our series, talk about that. It is beneficial. It is something that you can do in a variety of ways, and you need to look at what makes the most sense for you in each particular situation. If you are owning and operating these buildings yourself, if you're working with a sponsor, it's a great question to ask them. How do you all manage depreciation? And it's something, again, that you'll see on your K-1. All right. We've got a few more sessions that we're going to have on the tax code. I'm excited to finish this up for everybody and get to our final session, which is about the real energy around why all this exists and how this is good for everyone, tenants, investors, the community at large. That's a great topic that we always enjoy spending some time on. So love to have you join us next week for our next episode of Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling.